Hi, it's Mark Bittman, and welcome to Food. As usual, you can reach us at food@markbittman.com. Please email us whenever you are inspired to, and please also remember to subscribe to the podcast, leave us reviews, comments, etc. Subscribe to our daily newsletter, also The Bittman Project. You can find that at either bittmanproject.com or markbittman.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
On today's episode, I talk separately to two of my favorite people, really. The first is Ethan Brown, who's the founder, president, CEO of Beyond Meat, which, if you don't know what that is, go to the supermarket and look in the meat section, which it isn't. Ethan and I joke that we've been having an ongoing conversation for around 13 years, but really, it's true. I wrote about him in the Times in 2012, and we've been friends ever since, despite or maybe because he's trying to change me, or he's trying to change my aversion to fake meat. He's a wonderful guy and beyond passionate about what he does and why he does it. Is an interesting story, which we get into. My second guest is another longtime friend, the great Francis Moore-LePay, who wrote the trailblazing book, Diet for a Small Planet, which just celebrated its 50th anniversary, making it about 30 or 40 years before its time, with the revised and updated version. In all, Diet for a Small Planet has sold more than 3 million copies. Frankie, as she's known to many, is a true inspiration, someone I frequently quote and refer people to. She was talking about plant-centered eating when I was eating four-pound pot roasts with three friends and buying pockets full of chocolate bars from New York City newsstands. As you might have noticed, today's episode has a theme, that of, yes, plant-centered eating. The first reason is one I've already mentioned. Both Ethan and Frankie are people that I find inspirational and wonderful. The second is that I just released an interactive guide to cooking called How to Eat Less Meat. My team worked incredibly hard on this course. Take one look at it, and that much is evident. It's an entirely new way to cook, and I don't want you to be put off by the format because it can seem strange. It's text-based, SMS-based to be specific. But don't let that stop you from trying it. Think on-demand, completely tailored to your time frame cooking. Pick your recipe and start when you're ready. When you're done with the first step, you type in the word like heat or beans, designated for the next step, and so on. You can find my interactive guide on how to eat less meat by going to courses.markbittman.com or just go to markbittman.com and click on how to eat less meat. Anyway, that's all we have for you today. Note again that Frankie and Ethan are separate interviews and we start with Ethan, so be sure to keep listening after he and I say goodbye. Since we last talked, seriously, you're on fire. You're like everywhere, and you and Impossible are carving up the world between the two of you. What's happening?
Yeah, I think for us, it is definitely a case of, you know, we've worked very hard and had some terrific support along the way. But the truth is, we're in the right place at the right time. Like, this is something that the consumer is looking for. And it's being fueled by these kind of four things that we discuss a lot, which are around human health, you know, whether heart disease, diabetes, cancer, concerns that people have about the degree of those epidemics. And then you look at the climate and the increasing focus that consumers are giving to livestock and climate. And then you look at natural resource use, you know, land, energy, water, and finally animal welfare. And all of those things are moving from background to forefront in the consumer's mind as they think about food. And that fuels our growth. And what we're doing to maintain our position is to continue to focus on really the levers that have been central to us for the entire period, which is, you know, one, make the taste and sensory experience of the products indistinguishable from animal protein. So that for someone who just simply can't make any sacrifice when they're consuming that center of the plate protein, they don't have to. Second is around continuing to communicate and improve upon the nutritional benefits of our products. And so one of the pieces of work that I'm most proud of is the studies that were done by Stanford Medical, where they took consumers for 8-week periods and gave them Beyond Meat 3 times a day and then animal protein 3 times a day and over that 8-week period, and then compared the difference. And when the consumers were on Beyond Meat, they saw a measurable decline, both statistically and clinically significant in LDL, so the bad cholesterol. But really interesting, they also saw a decline in TMAO, which is, as you know, is a compound that closely associated in the gut with heart disease. And so we've now given we're doing a 5-year program with Stanford to continue to do studies like that, of which we have no control. It's an unrestricted grant. We're doing that because I believe so strongly in the health benefits of our products. And I want to push away all of the noise out there about, you know, is this healthier or not, and replace it with real data. And so as we drive that forward, more and more consumers come into what we're doing, improve the taste, improve the nutritional understanding of our products. And then lastly, we're on a cost curve that continues to move in the right direction, which is to ultimately get to the point where we underprice animal protein. So then if you have those three things, if you have taste, you have nutrition, and you have cost, of the $1.4 trillion that move in this industry, it becomes unusual consumer that says, you know what, it tastes just like it, it's better for me, and it costs less, I'm still not going to eat it. And I think at that point, you get into sort of ideological area at that point. And that's what we're focused on today, and that's what we've been focused on, I think, leads to the move we're making to try to get out of niche and into the main.
That's really an interesting argument. But you are out of niche, right? I mean, you're in Dunkin' Donuts, McDonald's. Those are hardly niche areas.
Yes, but I mean, I really think that I'll define success by a much more ubiquitous presence throughout the economy in terms of, you know, we're doing tests with McDonald's and small launches in different countries. But, you know, the deals we struck in the last year, one with McDonald's, 3-year partnership, and one with Yum, which includes the, you know, Taco Bell, Pizza Hut, and KFC brands, also a 3-year partnership. We're really a bid to take what is a pretty small operation today, you know, sub $1 billion, and grow it to a scale that will rival that of a JBS or Tyson. You know, at that point, I think I can say I'm mainstream.
It's funny. You and I are in I think it's probably going on a 12-year conversation here about this stuff.
Yes.
And, you know, I know that one of your goals all along has been not just to make ground meat analogs or whatever we want to call it, but you use the term center of the plate, and that kind of implies more steak-like or chicken breast-like or knife-friendly products.
Yeah.
What's the status of that work? How close are you to that?
Those are the holy grail, Mark, and that's, you know, something that for years we've been working on. We have, as you know, and this is what's so neat about our relationship. One of the many things is that, you know, you visit first in our first lab and production facility and everything else, and it was so small. And now we have over 200 scientists and engineers that are working in a sophisticated.
Wow.
Yeah, it's neat in Manhattan Beach area. Called the Manhattan Project for that sense of urgency around combining science and engineering toward a really important goal. And we're going to keep expanding that team. And I think, you know, we have these three different platforms, beef, pork, and poultry. And in each case, there are those signature products that are so important for us to do. And so steak is one in beef. In poultry, it's really a raw chicken breast. And how do you affect that? How do you get that translucent skin and all of the things that we're so used to for generations seeing? And then in pork, it's bacon. And we're working very hard on those things.
Right. And I would argue that in pork, it's a pork chop. But yeah, bacon would be great too, obviously.
Mark, what would you think on a pork chop with a bone in? Do you think there's any? So I always think about this. I always think about this for wings. Is there a day when you would create a wing that the consumer would want a wing where the bone itself is edible and provides nutritional value?
That's really an interesting question. I love that idea. I mean, the funny thing is that if you asked a bunch of chicken producers what their ideal wing would be, they'd be like, well, it'd be really great if we could make one that had no bone.
All right. I'll tell you something really interesting. So one of the companies that I deal with for a while, and I think it's changed under the pandemic, boneless sales were increasing a lot, which I think is true. And one of the reasons was it allows consumers to disassociate from the animal.
Yeah, I believe that.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Younger people. Yeah.
You shared something you'd written with me, and it was part of your story that I didn't know. You know, I'll say again that we're friends, and this is a relationship that goes beyond me talking to you about Beyond Meat. But one of the things I love about you is that you came by this honestly, and it wasn't just that you saw an opportunity. You're like a huge animal welfare guy, obviously. And I'm wondering if you could just tell how you got that way, because I think it's a nice story.
Thank you very much. You know, I grew up in the city in D.C. and in College Park, Maryland, Hyattsville area. And my father, who's a professor, really never wanted to be there. He married my mother, who is from New York City, and made a compromise. And compromise was that we would live in the city, but we would have a farm that we would go to on the weekends and out in the summertime and things like that. Cause that's where he wanted to be. He grew up in rural Connecticut. And so I had an existence growing up where, at school, I was kind of being taught by progressive teachers and such around, you know, discrimination, around race primarily, make sure that that you're not making moral judgments based on superficial differences. Then I was being brought out to the country and to a working farm. And I struggled as a child understanding the difference between treatment, and there was no untoward treatment, but just in general, I began to understand agriculture between a hooved and a hooved animal and an animal with a paw, for example. And, you know, there's a famous beginning to Charlotte's Web where the daughter is told that's just kind of the way it is, you know, and she says, well, I'm small and, you know, Wilbur's small, and are you going to kill me because I'm a runt? And the father says, well, it's different. And she says, I don't see how it's different. And the book goes on. But I found that to be profound because obviously, you know, she was talking about what is the actual difference, not the superficial difference, in my view. And so I sort of carried that with me. And no one gave me that speech that this is the way the world is. You know, I was never told that, because I don't feel like, well, I was spending a lot of time on the farm. I didn't come from the farm. And so I didn't have that lecture. And so I began to wonder about my own food choices very early, and went back and forth in the most incomplete and kind of incoherent way, not eating some species, eating others and things of that nature. And then I explained, I had very interesting moments throughout my childhood where I struggled with what I was doing. And one of them was around fishing. You know, I really enjoyed fishing. And I began to wonder about the life of the fish that I was taking and ultimately did more catch and release than not. But I, at the time, didn't quite understand what was driving that. And I began to read a lot around Darwin as I got older. And I began to understand that the feelings that I was having of a connection to animals were based on biology, not just emotion, right? That there was, I was seeing life forms that were more like me than not. And I grew up with that. And I tried to, integrate that in my own life. And again, in a really haphazard way, and it's always imperfect, but over time, I think I've gotten better at it. And I had an observation, I think, that was important for the company, which is around the origins of life and the unity of life in nature, where we both, plants and animals, have the double helix. That's how things are organized. And we're both using the same material, nitrogen, carbon, oxygen, et cetera. We are both organizing in similar designs. We are roughly symmetrical on a bilateral basis. Like this hand kind of matches this hand. Differences that are slight. The leaf of a plant is roughly symmetrical. The feather of a bird is roughly symmetrical. So it's different life forms expressing similar designs. And as you read Darwin, you begin to understand that we have more in common with animals than not. And that the shared genetic history of life suggests that there's a lot going on in there that we don't necessarily appreciate as humans. And so I began to think about how do you build a piece of meat without using the animal, because I love meat. Again, the answer lays in that unity of life in the sense that meat is this assembly of amino acids, lipids, trace minerals, vitamins, and water. And that's not exclusive to the animals I just discussed. It's actually present in plants. So the animal is consuming the plant and organizing them in the form of muscle. That's all the animal's doing. And so if we could take those directly from plants, and instead of using the biology of an animal, use heating, cooling, and pressure, which is the system we use, we could potentially separate meat from animals. And I think there's something beautiful in doing that and something that would be an advance in our own evolutionary history. And we're trying. And I think we'll get there someday.
I mean, I always love the way you explain that, the sort of replacement of what an animal does by machinery,
yeah,
but not at the cost to animal, at the benefit to animal.
Yeah. I read something the other day, which I really liked. It was a Leo Marx phrase, the machine in the garden, and the machine is in the garden. There's no way to get it out at this point. We have, fully... We're in the earth now. We've put the machine there, but can we now use it to benefit the garden versus dominate it? And that's what I want to try to do.
Yeah, that's great.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Have you ever bought something, owned something that really inspired you to up your game? A tennis racket, a new pair of running shoes, a new piece of cooking equipment that made you just want to cook your brains out? I know that when I first started cooking on induction burners, I just couldn't stop. It was so much fun. When we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has an exceptional capability that will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Some of the features that are available on this car include Dynamic Sky Panorama Glass Roof, Front Row Massaging Seats, you know you want that. Available 33-inch all-terrain tires, which you will want when you check out the multi-terrain select. These are really great features, the kind of features that will make you proud and happy to own a Lexus GX. Live up to the all-new Lexus GX, luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer. You know, we're celebrating the 50th anniversary of Diet for a Small Planet. You're a hero. You're a very modest hero, but we are about the same age. And yet when I was, learning how to cook and smoking pot in 1971, you were coming up with this concept that actually was, if not revolutionary, then novel and unique to its time and remained ahead of its time until the rest of us caught up with you 30 years later. You've told me this story, but I'd love you to tell it publicly how this happened, how you came to the conclusion that the West was by dint of its eating habits, the global North was effectively starving the global South, if that's the easiest way to sort of sum it up.
So, yes, we are, both of us were children of the 60s, right? We came alive, we came to adulthood during this very hopeful era where a lot of us thought we could make a difference. And actually, I went to a small Quaker school in Indiana, Earlham. And my first sense of personal agency was helping to start an Upward Bound project because the Office of Economic Opportunity, hey, what a concept, economic opportunity and the Great Society and the War on Poverty had created these funds that were available for universities to apply to bring low-income inner-city kids to campus during the summer to prepare them for college. And so that was the era that I graduated from college in, that, oh, we could do things and that the government was on our side and we were going to have maximum feasible participation was the slogan of the War on Poverty. And I thought, oh, I didn't have my term that I have now, but living democracy, democracy that is a practice, it's a doing, not a having, something we inherit, but what we do. But that was the spirit of that time. And so, Mark, I decided, yes, I'm signing up for that. And I went to work for the city of Philadelphia. It was pretty funny because I call myself a covert agent in the War on Poverty because my bosses hired me as a housing inspector, but my real assignment was to go literally knocking on doors at a very poor African-American community where I met all these women who were just struggling to get by on these meager welfare benefits and the humiliation that they had to go through even to get that. So I was an organizer, effectively, for the Welfare Rights Organization, while I was paid by the city of Philadelphia.
Right.
And so it was that magical time where people, well, I don't want to call it magical because we created it. It was a time when we thought change was possible. And it was exciting to be part of it. You know, this is what the Students for Democratic Society encouraged us to do, to go out and, you know, just do the good work in the communities. I made the most important decision I've ever made, I think. I said, okay, I'm not going to do anything else to try to save the world until I have some deeper understanding of how what I'm doing really connects to root causes. And then the light bulb went on. And of course, I was in the Berkeley area then, and there was a lot of back to the land stuff and food co-ops. And I thought, yes, food. If we could just figure that out, it's the most important need beyond, you know, breathing and water. If we could just figure out why people go hungry, why haven't we, the brightest species, figured this one out?
Right.
Then that would give me a direction. So I got my dad's slide rule, which I still have in the leather case. And I got to the UC Berkeley library and found a friendly librarian. And literally I put the numbers together, Mark. And I realized, wait a minute, there is no scarcity. We were bombarded with scare messages, fear of scarcity. And I'd like to say not just scarcity of goods, of things like food, but of goodness too. And that sort of came later in the 80s with Ronald Reagan. But nonetheless, it was a sense of fear that we were running out and that we had hit the Earth's limits. And that was dominant. And that fear then led people to believe, I think, that they had to go for the modern. I think from that fear frame, and when I realized that we are actually creating the experience of scarcity for many people and hunger for many people out of complete adequacy, plenty of food, I just had to tell the world. So I did a one-page handout because I never imagined myself as a writer, actually. I made a D on my first English paper in college. So I did not imagine that I would become a writer, but I had to share, so I did. And then I should know a little bit more, and it became a booklet. And that got into the hands of a founder of paperback publishing in America, Betty Ballantyne. And Betty just, I saw her a few years ago. She died. She
powerhouse in paperback publishing in America.
Exactly. A powerhouse who lived almost to 100, anchor. And I said, Betty, why did you take a chance on me? I had never written so much as a letter to the editor. And she said, with a twinkle in her eye, she said, Frankie, it was your ideas. If you couldn't write it, I could do that. So
she took the pamphlet and said, and encouraged you to write a book based on it.
Exactly. And the recipes were Betty Ballin's idea. And I said, okay, I'll do it. And I started soliciting ideas and recipes from friends and then tweaked them and turned it into what it was in 1971.
Tell us what you've done in the revitalized, reimagined 50th anniversary Diet for a Small Planet.
Well, with the great help of my daughter, Anna, who really she organized a team of efforts, including Wendy Lopez. Thank you, Wendy, who's a recipe developer, to really bring all of the recipes into the 21st century. Delightful recipes from chefs who volunteered that to help us out in this. And so Anna organized all of that. And she convinced me, Mark, by saying, do you realize there are references to margarine in your original book? I think we need an update. And what I've learned later, you probably know this because you know all things about this field, but I didn't know until recently that it was the sugar industry. There's some secret papers coming out now that the sugar industry is the one that really weighed in on the public consciousness to make us afraid of animal fat. And so that's why people were shifting to margarine, because they didn't want people to focus on sugar, which was taking off in our diet. And if they made animal fat into the bad guy, then they could get sneak through with their sugar and everything.
Right. They wanted everybody to think that there was only one bad actor, and that bad actor was saturated fat.
Whereas so in fact, I fell for it.
There can be many bad actors, and indeed there are. But,
so yeah. That was one of the things that has changed. No more margarine in the recipes. But I wrote a new introduction, a new introductory chapter that tells the story of how I got from this original aha moment about the incredible waste built into our grain-fed, meat-centered diet to a deeper analysis of, you know, what is wrong not only with agriculture, but why. And that has to do with our very limited understanding of democracy and our very corrupted democracy and the mythology around it. We think, last time I looked, most Americans think we're one of the greatest or the greatest in the world country. And that involves that we think we're a democratic leader, and we're just not. So part of it is trying to help people see the reality without bumming them out, you know, too much, because the last thing, Mark, we need is despair. Despair is the only real enemy, because people have stepped up in times of crisis and made enormous system changes in the past. And we need that kind of revolutionary spirit right now to go to the actual root in our broken democracy.
When you think of things as food problems, somehow they feel a little manageable. And then when you start thinking they're not really food problems, they're system problems, they're democracy problems, then it just feels so overwhelming. You kind of, I mean, I do know where to start. I sometimes feel I don't know where to start, but, and the solutions are generally the same. But when it goes beyond food and you start saying, and I quote you often, I say, these really aren't issues of food anymore. They're issues of democracy. Then it starts to feel like head exploding, because there's just so much to take on. There's just, the battle is just so big.
Yes and no, yes and no. Because we humans, it's not the magnitude of the challenge that does in the human spirit. It's not the magnitude. It's whether we can see a place for ourselves and see examples. I think we judge ourselves so much by what other human beings are doing. And so we need stories of people with the courage to break free of this money-driven system that is anti-democracy. And that's one of the things that I want to share in the book, and I do share in the new opening, but I want to do more of that. My vision for myself, and that I think could work for all of us, is to really feel not that I'm just in the food movement or I'm going to be active in the democracy movement, but that I am part of a movement of movements, because I feel emotionally identified with climate. I feel emotionally identified with food and agriculture, justice and sustainability. I feel deeply connected to the democracy movement. So really, if we could imagine ourselves as a movement of movements people, and we've created Small Planet and Democracy Initiative that represents organizations of about 45 million people, which is about right up there with those who still think the stop, you know, the stealing of the election happened. So our democracy diehards don't get counted that much. But anyway, these two, our little Small Planet Institute Democracy Initiative, created a website just called democracymovement.us. And I like that .us because it's either the United States or it's us. And I think it's both. So Democracy Movement.
Democracymovement.us. That's the site, right? I just want to get that clear.
Site. Okay, that's good. The site. And so there, we've got a map, and you can go to your state and see what groups are active and weigh in on if there's some hot legislation, if the Republicans are trying to push a voter suppression law on your state. So you can be part of resisting that deterioration of our democracy, but also working for the end of gerrymandering, which is so critical. So we have little stories there that you can see of people who are so excited about what they're accomplishing. So we see ourselves at Small Planet Institute as, yes, part of the food movement, and yes, part of the democracy movement. And they're not competing. They are complementing each other.
If I wasn't afraid of getting laughed at, I would say that the movement is about love. But because I am afraid of getting laughed at,
I won't quote you.
Love or compassion, then, because those words don't evoke smirks. I think justice is a really good word to, but you know,
yeah.
Just because we're talking about 1971, I reunited with an old friend and we'd gone to different places in 1970 and we'd both become political. And when we got back together in 71, we had this conversation, which was, how do we help people recognize that? And there was no food movement in 1971 because you hadn't invented it yet. But we had this conversation, which was, how do we help people understand that the women's movement and the environmental movement and the anti-war movement and the anti-racist movement and the anti-poverty movement and the whatever, so on down the line, are all the same movement? How do we get that to happen? And 50 years later, in a way that is still the, it is still one of the main struggles, is saying, how do we unify all of these disparate, legitimate claims? I mean, every movement that we support, every movement that we feel emotionally attached to is legitimate. How do we get them to come together under one big umbrella? That's not, by the way, the Democratic Party.
Well, I think part of it is how we present what we have to offer in these movements, because I believe that human beings, beyond the physical, we have some really deep emotional, psychological, moral needs, and they are for a sense of agency, that we're not powerless, and that our lives have meaning, and that we're connected to others in the pursuit of that sense of agency and meaning in our lives. And so the power, meaning, and connection is exactly what these movements offer. And we've got to get better at welcoming that this is not a you should, oh, you know, you've got to sacrifice to make life better for your children. But in addition to that, say, I guess there is a you should, of course, but it's a we can. It's an invitation to find power, meaning, and connection in your life right now.
I want to shift gears for a second to talk about food, since that is where this started for both of us. When Die for a Small Planet first came out, you stressed the idea, it was popular then, of combining proteins. You know, you had to eat brown rice and beans at the same time and so on. And then you came to realize, we all came to realize, that protein was easier to get in non-meat diets than we originally thought. And I still get that question a lot. How do I get protein if I cut out meat and fish? And my answer is always pretty much beans. Eat beans. Beans are the world's most important source of protein. I'm just wondering what, you must get that question. And I'm wondering what you tell people when they ask about protein intake without meat and fish.
Well, I start by telling people that currently Americans typically eat twice the protein their bodies can use. And as you know, we don't store it up. We just use it as energy. So you might as well just not worry about it. But so we eat twice as much as we can use. We don't store it. It's just used as energy first. And then what the scientists are now telling us, that if we eat a varied diet, this variation of amino acids that was the big deal when I wrote the first book in 71, it doesn't matter, because if we eat a varied and healthy diet of, you know, largely whole foods in the plant world, then we will get enough protein. Right. No problem.
Takes care of itself.
No worries. So it just lighten up. And I tried to do that. I tried to make that clear, but I really stress that in the new opening chapter too, and the sections there too. It's just so easy. We do not have to worry. And also at the end of the book, in one of the appendices, you can see sources of where different foods stand in terms of protein and cost. And so it makes it even clearer that way.
Are you eating any animal products at all?
Yes, I'm not a vegan. I do have milk in my coffee. And I do eat some milk and cheese and yogurt, yeah. But largely my diet is plant food, and I just feel that rather than a sacrifice, I'd love to say that, you know, when I stopped eating meat and started moving this way, people said, oh, but you're giving up so much. And I said, wait a minute, so much? If I turn toward the plant world, that's where all the diversity is. That's where all the texture, color, taste diversity is. So I'm not giving up. I'm I'm expanding my great universe of options.
We are so much on the same page. It's such a joy to talk with you. I have one last question, and that is, what did you have for dinner last night?
Leftovers. That's a great thing about leftover, about vegetarian. We had, these were these veggie enchiladas that I had made, and there were still two big ones left in the refrigerator in our pretty little red baking dish. So it was really easy. I heated that up, and then we belong to a community-supported agriculture farm. So I had this great chard that I could just do in the wok really quickly with some garlic. And so that was our dinner.
Great. Thanks for everything, Frank. It was great to have you on.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you for your leadership, and thank you for hanging in here.
This week for a recipe, we're going to do the garlic and leek ricotta spread from Diet for a Small Planet, since it is leek season after all. It's a simple recipe and a beautiful one. Here's your ingredients. 1 small head of garlic, olive oil as needed. 1 medium leek, the white and the green parts only, rinsed well and roughly chopped. My technique is chop first, rinse second in a salad spinner. 1.5 teaspoons tamari or soy, 1 cup of ricotta cheese, and salt and pepper. Here are your steps. Preheat the oven to 400 degrees. Cut the top 1/4 inch or so off of a head of garlic so you expose the cloves. Put the garlic on a sheet of aluminum foil and drizzle a teaspoon of olive oil over the exposed head. Wrap with the foil and bake for 25 minutes. While that's happening, heat a pan with a tablespoon of olive oil and add the leeks. Cook stirring for 3 or 4 minutes until the leeks are translucent, and then add the 1.5 teaspoons of tamari and cook until browned. Put the ricotta in a serving bowl. When the garlic's done roasting, allow it to cool, and then squeeze the garlic cloves from their skin into a small bowl and mash them with a fork. Discard the skins, of course. Mix the smashed garlic along with about 1/2 of the sautéed leeks into the bowl with the ricotta. Top with the remaining leeks. Sprinkle with a little more salt and pepper to taste. And serve. That's it. Thanks again to my friends Ethan Brown and Francis Moore-LePay for joining me on today's show. Follow Beyond Meat on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Beyond Meat. Follow Frankie on Instagram and Facebook at Francis Moore-LePay, FrancesMoore-LePPE, no spaces, and Twitter at FmLePay. The revised and updated Diet for a Small Planet with all new recipes is out now. Thanks again for listening, and remember to subscribe and tune in again next week, or download us again next week, when we will have someone awesome. Bye for now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Do you ever feel like your brain is on overdrive and your mind is constantly racing? The plans, worries, and to-do lists are never ending. Calm can help your mind take a break from the noise by softening anxiety symptoms in the moment and helping you cope with day-to-day stressors. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, giving you the power to calm your mind and change your life. Their meditations range to fit your needs each day, from anxiety and stress, relaxation and focus, to building habits and taking care of your physical well-being. They even have expert-led talks on topics such as tips for overcoming stress and anxiety, handling grief, improving self-esteem, caring for relationships, and more. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/stressless. Go to calm.com/stressless for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/stressless.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.